throws, and it's intercepted. It's intercepted by number 22. That's Clifton. He's got the left edge. Turns on the Jets. Still on his feet. Touchdown, Calvin Harris. What a play. Gault takes the snap. Once again, this time the quarterback wants to throw. He's rolling to his left, and he's going to be sacked. He's going to be sacked. Number 32, Caleb Spurr, was covering his side of the field, and he wasn't having any of that, and it's going to be a big loss. Hands it off at a counter trap to number two. There's a hole there, but then, oh, there's a ball loose. The ball's loose. Who's got it? Calaveras has it. Up to a running back. That's Ferrante over to the right side. He comes back up the middle. He's got room. One man to beat. He turns on the Jets. There he goes. Touchdown, Calaveras. What a play! Snappy hands off around the left edge again. That's Clifton again. Cuts back up the middle. Makes a man miss. Turns on the Jets. Touchdown, Calaveras. What a play! Young number 22, Ryan Clifton, got the left edge. He had one guy to beat. He cut back underneath in the middle and took it to the house.
All right, and welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our inaugural podcast, Season 1, Episode 1 of Let's Talk Football with Coach Val. I'm Gil Valtierra, the voice of Calaveras Football, and with me today is our special guest and a very good friend of mine, legendary offensive and defensive line coach for Calaveras High School, Mr. Scott Anderson. Coach, can't thank you enough for being here today. Thank you.
Hey, no problem, man. It's a pleasure to be here, actually. I don't know about legendary, but I'll take it.
Well, a little background for our audience here. Scott and I have coached together at Calaveras High School, 13, 14 years or so. And we first met when I coached at Linden High School, back when Linden was in the Motherlode League in the early 2000s, and I actually had to coach against Scott as an opponent. And we spent countless hours together watching film, attending coaching clinics, discussing personnel decisions, and, of course, actually being on the sidelines coaching games together. I never thought, Coach, that I'd meet anybody that was dedicated to this game until I met you, and I thought, wow. Here's a guy just like me who's willing to put in the time and do all the work, and really appreciate all the time, all the things that you taught me.
Hey, you know, it's kind of funny that you said it's 30 years already. It went by quick, you know. When you're out there in the heat of the summer, though, it doesn't feel like it's moving very fast. But back in the Linden days when you were over there, I was just looking for a drinking buddy, I think. So that was a
well, you found one, yeah. And then the residual was, yeah, you had a football coach that came along with it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, speaking of that, I ran into Coach Miller the other night.
Oh, you did?
We were down at the UOP women's basketball game.
Way.
And he was there watching. I was there with the whole family. And so he came over and said hi after the game. And for those of you out there, Coach Mark Miller, legendary coach at Linden High School.
Absolutely.
Been there forever. So ran into him. It was nice to see him up and around and doing things.
Tell you a quick story. So I work with this guy named Tom Mayo. He owns Mayo Construction down in Stockton. And he played for Coach Miller back in the 80s. And he told me a story that Coach Miller would talk about. He'd say, you know, those guys up in Calaveras, they one leg's longer than the other. And the kids would say, well, what's the reason for that, Coach? He goes, running on the side of them hills. So it's kind of a unique deal. Yeah.
Well, good. Thanks, Coach. So, you know, our topic today, you know, with all your years of experience, we want to talk about, you know, the differences between high school kids, high school football players, I should say, today compared to, say, high school football players 10, 20, even 30 years ago. And you and I know we've been on the football field during practices, and we compare older players to maybe some of the newer players and all of that stuff. And, you know, what do you, you know, there's so many different things that have changed in your 30 years. What's some of the ones that just immediately pop to your mind as far as here's the difference between, you know, a high school player 10, 20, 30 years compared to today?
Yeah. The internet has a lot to do with that. You know, they can self-diagnose injuries, you know, they can, you know, be three pages ahead of you in terms of, you know, film watching, you know, kids, nowadays compared to back then, it was much more primitive. You know, the way we interacted with the kids during film now is completely different than the way we did back in the, you know, the 90s, of course,
right,
using VCR tapes and, you know, locking it up and trying to rewind it, and it's fuzzy and you're arguing over fronts and
shades. When I played, I remember the coach would roll in
the big
metal wheels, what do you call those old tapes?
Super 8 or whatever.
The Super 8s, It'd be on this big four-wheel thing that he's pushing into the classroom.
Yeah,
and
Shoot, you know, at Calaveras back when Flock ran the program, we didn't have much film, you know. We got to sneak in. They had a booster club meeting every Wednesday at the cafeteria, and we'd sneak in there and get to watch film and listen to him talk about, you know, us, you know, which was pretty cool. You know, you could really hear how he feels.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
from the film perspective, I always felt like from a coaching, when I was younger, as a younger coach, when I first started out, I probably didn't watch as much as I should have.
Yeah.
As I got older, I started spending more time and watching more of it. And then you're right as far as the sophistication, because now you've got kids, and you know, we when I watch film, I had to do it when it was practice time, when the coach gave me time,
right,
and that was it.
Right.
There was no internet. I went home. There was no other further watching film. These kids have it on their phones,
right,
and their app on their phone.
Exactly.
They can watch it right there. And so they could call their coaches out and say, hey, that's not what they're doing. And so you almost nowadays have to be on your toes.
You've got to be a page ahead of them for sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of these kids go to those camps during the summer, you know, and they learn techniques that, you know, they bring back, and some are, you know, we can implement, and some just, you know, outlandish. I can remember we had a kid went to a Butte camp, O-line camp years ago. He comes back, you know, and we're a big quick set, you know, pass pro team, you know, big on big, what have you. We go get him and lock up, you know, and this kid comes back with the kick step, you know, and he wants to, you know, wrist together, thumbs up, and he's really, you know, and I said, hey Jack, you know, great that you learned that. You're going to have to use that the next level, because this is how we're doing it,
right,
you know. And
right.
So that was kind of a new one to me, you know, for a kid to, you know, kids feel comfortable too nowadays, you know, they really do. They feel comfortable about coming up to you and asking you why, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In our day, we wouldn't dare, you know, ask a coach why.
Yeah,
you know,
you just did what you were told.
You did what you're told, and went about your business. I can remember as a kid seeing Coach Flock, you know, walking down the aisle in the store, and man, he was God. You know, he was my God, man. And that's, I'm gonna play for him one of these days as a little kid, you know.
Right.
You know, and when he, you know, reached out with a handshake, it meant something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So film being one of them, technology being something where, so today's high school player clearly has the advantage as far as the technology,
right,
and
right,
the tools available to them.
Yeah.
Me personally, you put in 30 and still going, by the way.
Yeah.
He'll be back next season, folks, so we're excited for that.
31, huh?
I stopped at 24, but even in those 24 years, besides technology, to me, there was a mental toughness thing. I always felt like, you know, 20 years ago, we had some kids that were just so mentally tough.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And recently, it seems like, not to say that there isn't tough kids today, because there are some tough kids out there. But I would just say, if there were a scale, is it trending upwards or downwards? I would say, personally, in my opinion, there's a downward trend in mental toughness. I'll give you a quick story. I remember a kid, he was an inside linebacker. Went in to make a play, got caught up in the garbage, comes back up, runs to the sideline like he was going to shake my hand. And I'm like, what are you doing? and his ring finger was dangling from his hand like it's about to fall off his hand. And I'm like, I'm spooked out. I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, call the medic, right?
Right,
and this kid's laughing, looking at the finger like it's going to fall off his hand.
Right.
So the medic comes. It's dislocated. They pop it back into his hand. They tape it up. He missed one play. He went back out there, and the very next play, he sacks the quarterback, gets up, looks at our sideline, and screams like, let's go. He was so fired up.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, this kid is tough.
Buddy tape it together and go, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was just one tough kid.
Yeah.
And then now, you know, you fast forward to maybe a couple years ago or towards the end of my coaching career, and that same play, that kid would have been out 3 weeks with a note from the doctor. Yeah. And, you know, why do you suppose that is? Is that difference?
WebMD, you know?
Yeah.
Kids, I don't know. I think it's they're about the same, you know. Honestly, toughness is toughness. Tough kids come out to play football,
regardless of what decade they were born in.
They're tough. Tough kids are tough kids. Back in the day, we used to say the West Point kids were a little bit tougher because you know they had to drive the bus, ride the bus an extra hour a day. But that just doesn't hold true. You know, it comes in waves. I think you know. You know, you'll have a real, real tough team and competitive team. Then you kind of have a softer team, you know.
More, right.
Call it a finesse team. I don't know.
It's interesting you bring up the whole, you know, this kid's got to commute to even just get to school.
Yeah.
One of the things that came to my mind is the environment, you know, the home life, what that kid's going through outside of the schoolyard.
Yeah.
Does that, do you think that has any effect on their level of toughness or not?
It probably does, you know. You know, you get banged up. It's easy, you know. It's just like calling into work. You know, you get a little banged up on a Sunday night watching football a little too late. You know, you may want to call into work. But I don't know if there's a real gauge for that. I know back in the 90s, we played on a grass field. You know, the kids got dirty. You know, now we get scabs from the field. You know, and staph infection and all that, you know, all that plays into it. I think mental toughness wise comes from the family. You know, if your parents allow you to, you know, get away with stuff, you know, call the shots basically. But we don't have a lot of those kids. You know, for the most part, we've got, you know, a pretty good group of kids year in and year out. We might have a slapdick here and there, but you know, it's, you know, what school doesn't. I can remember going to Amador, you know, and not knowing the lineage, you know, of the kids, you know, showing up. And I found that, and I kind of tweaked my coaching style a little bit when I went over there, just for the fact that I didn't know the kids and I couldn't read them right away. So I basically had to ask a lot more questions, family oriented questions, and you know,
so sports psychologists on top
right,
of X's
yeah,
and
yeah,
O's and...
yeah, yeah, you know, and you can take, you know, the other coach's word, but until you really find out about the kid and see how they tick, then you can, you know, tailor your coaching points to that, you know.
Right. Well, it's funny you brought up the 90s and I brought up psychology. Because there's something that's always been a thorn on my side, and you know as well as anyone that ever comes talks to me about this topic, that really gets the hairs on the back of my neck starting to stand up and, you know, get upset. And that's this, you know, I don't know who it was, some mental health professional back in the 90s that decided there shouldn't be any losers.
Well,
and that, you know, everybody got a participation trophy. I remember a time both my girls, they played soccer, and I'd go out and watch them play, and at one point there was a game being played, and I said, what's the score? And they said, well, we're not keeping score. And I'm like, "What? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What is going on here? So to me, it felt like, you know, we taught a generation of kids how not to compete and how not to go hard after something and try to win. And then now we're dealing with those same kids now that are grown up and they're in the workforce and they went through school and – Do you think that generation, they had something to do with maybe some of the differences on how they went about when? How did that kid play football compared to the prior generation?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. It really is a good question. How it happened and why did it happen? That's the psychology of that too. Honestly, participation trophies are just, in my opinion, ridiculous. And just like you, however, you know. whatever keeps the kids motivated to start playing a sport, I'm all about too, you know. I watched my two boys play soccer and, you know, the fruit breaks and then take a knee when somebody gets hurt BS, you know, it just drove me nuts, you know. But my kids aren't that way. So it's kind of individualized, you know.
So it still comes down to what's happening in that home.
Yep, right between the walls, you know, what's really going on. I can attest to my kids, my two boys. They played football up until they got to the varsity level, and then they backed out of it, you know, and that was their decision. And I wasn't going to make those guys play a game that they didn't really love, right? So, and they found their other passions, you know. Both of them, you know, did their own things, and they turned out pretty well. I feel that you know, it's how you're brought up. Honestly, right. You know, honestly is so.
Yeah, I completely agree because, you know, I think my younger daughter Lisa came off the field that day and she goes, "I know we won because I got a hat trick." So she was keeping score. Right, the team wasn't keeping score, right? Yeah. So I think you're right. It's how you're brought up. It just really is one of the, to me, you know, and maybe it's getting older. You know, you shake your head at the TV and at the news, like what is going on here? And I always tell my wife that. You grab any problem in the world going on today, and I can put on my Sherlock Holmes hat and through the art of deduction show you how it's because of participation trophies and causes.
Boil it down always to participation
trophies. The Gaza Strip and all that. Yeah. Participation trophies, right? It's like no matter what's going on, it's the participation trophies is the culprit.
You know, I think it was last night, the Army-Navy game, right?
Yes, yes.
The pageantry and just the old school mentality and feel about that game, you know, out in the elements, rain in, you know, and these stadium full of proud Americans, tough Americans, you know, that kind of made me feel good, you know, watching that game.
Absolutely.
I couldn't tell you who won, you know. I was in and out of the room, but when I saw that opening and all the pageantry of it, oh man, I got patriotic and I was feeling pretty good about it.
Absolutely. I love watching that game. I believe Army won. Yeah. It was a close game. They jumped out ahead of them. Right. Navy attempted a comeback, and they came up just a yard short.
Yeah.
And but Army ended up winning the game.
I was on Twitter or X, whatever you call it nowadays. And they had, it was the Army locker room after the game, you know, and they were talking to, the coach was talking about, you know, we're going to fight some more. Then we're going to fight some more. We're not going to give up. Then I'm going to lay down and bleed a little bit. Then I'm going to get up and fight some more. Fight, fight, fight. I was like, yeah, man, that was so cool, you know.
You can't help but get fired up when you watch those guys go.
I was pumped up. And, you know, there's some tough kids, man, playing on both sides of that football, and they're going to go out and, you know, do some good things for America.
Absolutely. You know? It's funny you say that. We had a former Calaveras graduate and Calaveras football player, Austin Waters, if you remember him. He played offensive line, a little defensive line. And he came to the sideline. I forget which game, but it was just this past season.
Oh, yeah.
And he's currently enlisted. He's in the U.S. Army. And he came up and he says, hey, Coach Val, he goes, I got to tell you this. He goes, I'm stationed in Germany, and they had me out there sleeping in a hole outside in the middle of a freaking snowstorm. Oh, and I'm freezing like you wouldn't believe. Mental games start to happen. Can I do this? Can I not do this? And all this stuff. He goes, and Coach, I heard your voice in the back of my head when you used to just run us like you would, there's no tomorrow.
Right.
And said, you think this is something? One day you're going to run into something that's going to be hard. You're going to remember this time to keep going.
That's cool.
And he said that kept him going, sleeping in a hole in the snow out in the middle of Germany.
Thinking about Coach Valtierra.
Thinking about his football coach screaming at him to get going.
Oh, that's pretty cool, man. That's a pretty cool story for sure.
So that's, again, just kids out there living life, finding ways to utilize things they learned in football to keep them going.
Yeah, the sweet thing about coaching in a small community, you know, for 30 years or more, And everywhere you turn, you see one of your ex-players or an ex-player's wife or their sons or daughters, you know, and it just makes you feel good, you know. And they all know who you are, you know.
Right, absolutely.
You know, so it's kind of like that role reversal from old Coach Flock, you know, walking down the aisle of the store, you know, when you see them. It makes you feel really good to, you know, they're like, hey, letting their girlfriend or their wife, you know that I was a coach and was their coach and how much it meant to them, you know, which was really neat.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I think I miss the most when I stepped away. Not so much the grind and the summer practices, all that, but that camaraderie and relationships, you're absolutely right. I mean, those are one of the things that are the most valuable out of the whole thing.
Yeah, you know? It really is, you know. You know, in what I do for a living, you know, I like to hire football guys because I know they're tough. I know they're going to show up, and I know they're going to give 100% for me, you know. You know, I don't have a full staff of them, but I have a few guys that played for me. Donnie Kelly, you know, tough kid, just a sweetheart of a man, you know, and he works his ass off. And that's all. I probably would have never known him if I didn't coach him in 05 or 06 or whatever it was.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Coach, with all the differences, you know, we've discussed here today, you know, we talked about mental toughness, the technology, the participation trophies. I know, you know, as coaches, we're out there also being teachers, teaching these young people. At the end of the day, you know, coaches are teaching young people not just the game of football, but the game of life. Things like setting goals, overcoming obstacles, working hard, the importance and concept of team first. How do you teach these concepts to today's player, and what are the challenges in doing so?
You know, it's easier for an offensive line guy to teach unity. You know, it takes all five guys to work together for one play, you know. So, for me, it's really not too hard to teach the concept because I'm with those guys for a good portion of 2 hours a day talking about the same stuff, talking about footwork. And if his feet don't match your feet, you're going to be separated by so many inches, you know, and that could create a seam, whatever. Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, you always start slow, and you try to figure out who the main player is that could bring these guys around when they're fired up and all moving on the same path. You can be unstoppable, you know. And I try to teach that every day. It's just no matter what you do, you know. If you're waxing your car, man, give it 1,000%, you know. If you're picking up dog shit outside, do the best job you can, you know. It's all about pride and at the end of the day. So
right now with, you know, I remember when I was coached, you know, I had more of the tyrant type coach, right?
Yeah,
where he did things one way and everybody and their mother just better hop on board and do it exactly the way he wanted to do. And I didn't like that style myself. I always felt like, you know, I had a question, but maybe I was afraid to ask the question because I didn't want to get, you know, berated in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And then nowadays, you know, coaches can communicate with players. They're texting them. There's the huddle website. So there's you know, electronic messages going out to the team talking about when practices are and when they're not or when one get canceled, all that good stuff. Do you think today's coaches have to kind of shift gears and pivot and do things differently from a teaching perspective? Maybe instead of just doing it one way and all, you better learn it. Maybe I've got to, you know, some are more auditory, so some are more, you know, you got to write it down. Some need to see it and talk about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, kids all learn in different ways, you know. You know, you might have a right guard or a left guard that is a left-handed football player, you know. And, you know, you try to teach, you know, different techniques to these kids. And sometimes you have to get down and show them, you know. Then you got to show film. I've learned that to use the phone and the internet to my advantage, to my guys. What I'll do is I'll pull up some clips of some, you know, college team or a pro guy working on the same footwork that I'm preaching, and the light bulb clicks for them. You know, they're like, oh, that's what you're talking about—a gallop step hip check or what have you, you know, climb to the next level. You know, we assume they know, but they don't know. And they, a lot of them won't ask those crucial questions. Why are we doing this? You know? So I always try to, follow up with you guys understand what I'm talking about. I probably say that 1,000 times a week, man. You know, hey, you guys understand, we're not going to move on until you understand what I'm talking about or what we're trying to do here. So yeah, it's trying. You know, you're working with some special ed kids sometimes that mm-hmm. are, you know, that have issues and you know, we just get through it. You got it. You have to.
Right.
You know?
I don't think a lot of folks realize, just real quick, we're running towards the end of our time here, but real quick, share with everybody just, you know, I don't know if people out there think that, you know, we just kind of show up at practice and, you know, run the kids around, try a couple plays, show up on Friday and hope for the best.
Boom, yeah.
But talk to me a little bit about all the extra time that you put in as far as the film and preparing and yeah. the Sunday meetings that yeah. a lot of people yeah. don't realize about. And yeah.
It's a 7 day a week commitment for all of us coaches that want to be good and want to put the time in. You have to be there. You have to be available for the kids, you know, either, you know, over the phone or texting or what have you. Yeah. Watching film, golly, man, we have a film tracker, and Coach Mosa pulls it up every Sunday to see who's watching what, you know.
Right.
And I don't like to be that guy that's not, doesn't have the amount of hours in, you know? So, yeah, it's quite an ordeal, you know, in, you know, between Christmas and New Year's is kind of our break. Then we get it fired back up and after the new year and we're going again, you know, we have the weight room opened and we get in there 3 or 4 days a week and just try to figure out, you know, what we're going to do and who we have.
All right. Well, for all you out there listening, we appreciate you listening. Be sure to, you know, tune in to our podcast. This will be available on everywhere you download podcasts, as far as, you know, Spotify, Apple, all the different podcast mechanisms that are out there be available. Our next episode, we'll have the head football coach at Calaveras, Manny Mosa, coming in, and our topic on our next episode will be Pop Warner and youth football. And, you know, how young is too young? Should they be playing at a certain age? You know, the effects on the community with that program, how it affects the high school or not. And so we'll be digging into that. For those of you out there listening, you want us to, you know, address the question, we're going to have coaches on here all the time. You can go to our Instagram page, which is Let's Talk Football With, and then underscore coach underscore Val. So let's talk football with Coach Val with the underscores. Follow it on Instagram. Of course, you can always follow the Calaveras High School Football Instagram page. I run both those pages, so you can check us out for all the latest and greatest. And when the next episode is going to drop, Coach Anderson, Scott Anderson, 30 years high school football. Can't even imagine the amount of lives that you've had an effect and a positive change on for all those young men out there that are now, you know, contributing members of our community, husbands, fathers, all that's good stuff. You know, I thank you very much for being here today.
No problem.
And for having this conversation. Any last outgoing words you want to share with us?
Well, I'm not done yet. You know, I'm still chasing that elusive section title. So I think I'll be around for a few more years, you know, as long as I can do it.
Well, I want that to happen for you as well. And I'll be there and, you know, hopefully I'll be on that broadcast in the game when it's going on there.
No doubt.
So again, our topic today had been high school players of today versus high school players of decades past and the differences, some of the challenges. Some of the benefits. Coach Anderson's been my guest. I'm your host, Gil Valtierra. We thank you for tuning in. And we will see you all next time.
And it's intercepted. It's intercepted by number 22. That's Clifton. He's got the left edge. Turns on the Jets. Still on his feet. Touchdown, Calaveras! What a play!
Dalton takes the snap. Once again, this time the quarterback wants to throw. He's rolling to his left, and he's going to be sacked. He's going to be sacked. Number 32, Caleb Spurr, was covering his side of the field, and he wasn't having any of that, and it's going to be a big loss. Hands it off at a counter trap to number two. There's a hole there, but then, oh, there's a ball loose. The ball's loose. Who's got it? Calaveras has it.